All right, folks, good evening. Welcome to the Creation Science Hour. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson talking to you live here. What is this date today? John, my watch is broken.
May 26th.
May 26th. Yesterday was my son's birthday. I got another son's birthday coming up here in a few days, and we keep plenty busy. I forgot to open up the little guy for AOL Instant Message here, but I'll get him. It's been a zoo here today. Okay, folks, if you want to call in, you can be on the program, 850-479-3466. That spells Dino. 850-479-DINO. And you can call in and be on the program. We'd love to have your comments or questions. We believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. We believe the evolution theory that's being taught in our schools is one of the dumbest and most dangerous religions in the history of humanity. It is not a science. There is nothing scientific about the idea that you came from a rock 4.6 billion years ago. Silly, dumb, retarded. That's okay, though. If you want to believe it, that's fine. But don't lie to support your theory, which is what's going on. Number two, don't make me pay you while you lie to support your theory that we came from a rock 4.6 billion years ago. Those are my objections, and a lot of other people's objections, too. We have a lot of material on our website, drdino.com, as well as 8 new debates, which are now ready, in production, the DVD anyway, shipping today, all 8 of the new ones. And the VHS version, we're just waiting on covers from the printer. Should be in any day. Might have come in today. I don't know. I didn't check shipping. So if you want to get our stuff, check our website, drdino.com. Also, we have a new product. It's kind of interesting. It's the entire Bible on CD at double speed. You can listen to the entire Bible while you drive or whatever you do when you have time to listen. I listen to the Bible at double speed on a record player that I have here. I've done it for years. And you can memorize huge portions of the Bible. You kind of have to follow along. I mean, read it as you're listening, because they talk pretty fast. It's Alexander Scorby, good King James Version, and good English accent there. You can listen to Alexander Scorby as he reads the whole Bible to you. Only he can pronounce some of them big words in the Old Testament, too. I don't know anybody else who can pronounce them. Okay, let's see. Where are we at, Jonathan? We have testimonies and radio questions. Now, you had a couple of testimonies yesterday. Did you finish those that you were working on? Okay. Here's one from, that's a long one here. I'll just read a little bit of it. Dr. Hovind, my prayer is that you'll get to read this letter yourself. Okay? This is from Rachel. I'm reading it, Rachel. Your teachings have been a great blessing to me and my mother. We watch your show on Channel 30, WVCY, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. About a year and a half ago, I was watching your show alone because my mother had to wake up early the next morning. Your show airs at 11 p.m. And that was the perfect opportunity for me to give my life to the Lord. I prayed the prayer with you at the end of your program, and the past year and a half have been a growing and learning experience. God has truly changed my life. Before I came to the Lord, I was heavily involved with hard liquor and drugs. I used to take a lot of pills and drink almost every day. And honestly, it almost killed me. My mother was so scared for me and worried about me. It hurt her so much. And when I came to the Lord, I never drank. I never did any drugs, and I haven't been sexually active. And God worked through you to really change and save my life. God has blessed me in many more ways than I could count. God has transformed me. God is who He says He is. He is a God of love, a God of grace and mercy. And now I have the chance to finally tell you, thank you for all you're doing for the Lord. And now, like Paul said, my goal is to please Him, to be obedient to His commands and His voice. And it goes on and on, telling thank you for the teaching about the cavemen and the flood. Well, Rachel, that's wonderful. Thank you so much. We appreciate that. Here's one. Let's see. Joy Hutchins in Arizona writes in. This is a letter of appreciation for your ministry. I purchased my first set of tapes some years ago and have made several copies to share with friends and family. I learned so much through the information on your tapes. Let me stop here and say, folks, the tapes they're talking about is our seminar series, Creation, Evolution, and Dinosaurs. 15 years ago, I moved to Pensacola, about 15 and a half years ago, and I wrote a letter to the editor because an article had come in out of the newspaper that said dinosaur bones are found from 80 million years ago. I had been teaching science 15 years prior to that and been studying the creation-evolution subject intently for many years. But this letter, just, I was brand new in town, and I thought, well, I've never written a letter to the editor. I'll try one. So I wrote my first ever letter to the editor and said, hey, guys, these dinosaur bones are from the dinosaur that drowned in the flood in the days of Noah. They are not 80 million years old. Well, that's all it took. You would have thought I had shot the sacred cow, because I got called everything you can imagine, and some things you probably can't imagine, for the next 8 months in the local Pensacola News Journal. which I don't take, by the way. I get a call once in a while asking if I want to take it. I say, no, ma'am, I don't have a parakeet. I see no use for that unless I had a parakeet flying the cage. But anyway, the local university asked me to come do a debate with one of their professors because of the letters to the editor going back and forth. And I had never had a debate in my life except with my wife, and I lost those every time. As Jonathan will find out here one day, right? As soon as we find you a wife.
I don't know. I guess I will someday.
Well, I'll find you one. We hook everybody up around here. We're, you know, we think it's not good for a man to be alone. So we fix up a lot of couples. Bill and Ruth, they got three kids now. Bill's on staff for, 10 years? Let's see. I could look around the staff here and see who else we fixed up.
But I think we work too hard around here for me to be getting married right now.
Right now you're a little busy. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Get everything done and get your list done, and then you'll never get married.
Yeah.
If you got to get the list done. Anyway, the tapes we're talking about here started. I spoke at the university, did a debate. We videotaped it. And then a couple of churches asked me to come speak, so I went and spoke at the church. And just really within a six-month period, I went from, you know, putting my wife and kids through school, being a foreman at a cabinet shop, because I've always loved construction also, to all of a sudden I'm getting so many calls to come speak on creation that I finally told my boss, hey, I have to quit. This is my 2 weeks' notice. I'm going to go full-time in evangelism. And so we launched out into the deep, and now for 15 years I've been doing this full-time, and there's over 40 people on staff here trying to assist us and get the job done. We have Dinosaur Adventure Land. We have our first ever and first annual, actually, Southeast Creation Conference coming up this September. If you want to come, hear Jack Cavazzo speak, or Dr. Carl Baugh, Dr. Dennis Swift. We got all kinds of cool things coming up this September. So come on down. It's on the website. There's a click right on the front page, isn't it? Okay. Anyway, so the tapes they're talking about is a result of the teaching I do on creation evolution. I spoke 836 times last year. I don't know what it's going to be this year, but, you know, a lot. So we tape the lectures about every year and a half because I'm always adding new material. Matter of fact, Jonathan's adding a few new slides today for me, right? We got the Discover Magazine tailbone thing.
We've got Discover Magazine. It's actually more than just tailbone. The author, Jocelyn Salem, wrote a two-page article called Useless Body Parts. One of them did get a full page. It was the tailbone, the coccyx, saying it is useless. We do not need it.
And this is proof for evolution.
Yeah. This was in Evolution Part 1 of Discover Magazine, June 2004 edition. Holding it right here in my hand.
June 2004. They are still teaching the tailbone is vestigial. You don't need it. And this is proof of evolution. Well, Jocelyn, if you're listening, pay close attention. I will pay to have your tailbone removed if you really think it is vestigial and you don't need it anymore. There are 9 muscles that attach to that tailbone without which you cannot perform some very valuable functions.
Well, there's some other things in here that Jocelyn says are vestigial, such as the appendix, the wisdom teeth, human, you know, eyebrows, or not eyebrows, but body hair. And there's so many things in here that are supposed to be vestigial. The sinuses, all of this stuff is supposed to be vestigial and useless. And it clearly has purposes, some of them are very well known. So
it blows my mind that people in the 21st century could still be so dumb as to believe something like that, you know. But hey, this is America, the land of the free and the home of the slave. You can believe whatever you want, you know. So I'm glad they believe that. And it's okay for them to publish it in their magazine. Honestly, that doesn't bother me. What bothers me is they want to teach that propaganda, that lie, to kids in the public schools at our expense. They want us to pay for them to lie to the kids. That bothers me a lot. I'm going to die trying to fix it. So anyway, we could cover about the tailbone on video number 4. Joy, who's listening in here, Hope sent me the letter. The videotapes get redone about every year and a half to add new material. Let me finish reading a testimony here. Then, John, you got some comments on that you want to make? Okay, if you do, holler. Let me finish this. It says, my children love your videos and share them with their friends and teachers. My daughter, Mallory, is 15 and goes to bed listening to one of the seminars or debate tapes on a regular basis. They are informative, educational, and entertaining. I have recently just purchased a new set to send to my mother-in-law, who's not a Christian. I believe these will be the tool in reaching her and ultimately her salvation. It's exciting to see God work. Thank you, Joy Hutchins. Well, Joy, thank you so much for the letter, and I do believe from our experience here is these videos will help people get saved because they're a little non-threatening. They can sit home in their house and watch the VCR or DVD. and get saved. Okay, here we go. Pavel. We got a Pavel on staff here. Ukrainian name here. S-E-N-N-I-K-O-V. Senikov. Pavel writes, a short note to encourage you. Last winter, I showed your seminars to students in one of the schools here in St. Petersburg, Russia, ages 12 and up. I was showing your seminars through video projector on big screen for several weeks for 40 minutes each time. That was all I was allowed. Each time over 60 kids would come to see it. Each time they enjoyed it, and they would start good discussions about the info they received from your videos. The teachers would come to watch the videos also. Teacher of biology walked out of the room on the second video and would never come again without explanation, unfortunately. School director, she is a Christian, really appreciated me showing these videos. She ensured each student get a printed outline of the Hoban theory. In the end, when we finished watching videos, she asked if we could show the students Mel Gibson's Passion movie of Christ, and we did, accompanied with the message. Wow. According to several testimonies of students and teachers, the whole atmosphere in school has changed to the better after these showings. And to some, these video seminars were the most interesting event of the school year. God bless you, Pavel, from Russia. Well, amen. Pavel, thank you so much for writing. That's wonderful. We appreciate that. We get a lot of testimonies like that, folks. If you want to get involved in a ministry that changes lives forever, I don't know anything that does better than the creation ministry. I've been doing it 15 years and getting a lot of calls every week saying, please come. And I go every week. I don't know what else to do. Get more people out there. You're going to go out one of these days, Jonathan. We'll get you all. You got the red pen. You got the moped. Well, you had the moped. A Swiss Army knife. And then a wife. And you're ready to go. No Swiss Army knife. Oh, you got to have a Swiss Army knife. Okay. Michael Penn writes in. By the way, folks, if you want to AOL instant message us, you can do that at Dr. Dino Live, and we will answer your questions right here on the air, live. Okay, this is from Michael Penn, who writes, I looked at your $250,000 offer. Let me stop here and say, folks, on the website for 12 years, we've been offering $250,000 for anybody with any real scientific proof for evolution. The theory is one of the dumbest theories there is. There is no scientific evidence for evolution at all, and somebody wants to believe there is, that's fine. But there's no evidence for it at all. Also, you got a new scientist here. What's that one about?
New scientist. They had a couple of very interesting ones, very interesting articles and publications in here. One of them was, let's see here. It's on page, by the way, New Scientist is a secular magazine. On page 20, Eric Lerner, as well as a dozen other scientists, were thoroughly criticizing the Big Bang Theory. You know, we could just go through and check out a couple of them. The subtitle to this thing says, our ideas about the history of the universe are dominated by Big Bang Theory, but its dominance rests more on funding decisions than on scientific method, according to Eric Lerner and dozens of other scientists. So these scientists, at least 13 in this right here, in a secular magazine, are criticizing the Big Bang Theory, saying that too many people put their faith in this instead of testing it, first of all.
It's a dumb theory.
Yeah. Big dumb theory.
A big dud. That's what it is. Big bang, big dud. All right, folks, we're after the break. You can join us here. Be right back. DrDino.com. All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson here in Pensacola, Florida. Lovely Pensacola. A little warm today. What, 88, I think? But, man, nice here. We get a lot of rain, but we don't have to shovel it. Praise God. All right. I froze up in Minnesota a couple of days ago. Still cold up there. Michael Penn writes in, saw your $250,000 offer. You mentioned that some bring up a comparison of evolution theory to gravity. You make some excellent points there, and all true. I was just wondering why you haven't brought up the fact that gravity is no longer considered a theory, but a law. The same cannot be said of natural selection or evolution. Also, microevolution is not a theory either. Attempts by evolutionists to propose that evolution is fact based only on its microevolution definition are simply cowardly evasion of the topic. Ooh, that's good. I realize I'm preaching to the choir, but why not confront them with their own hypocritical conclusions? Michael. Good point, Michael. Microevolution is a lousy term. It should not be called that. It should just be called a variation because that's all it really is. There are a lot of varieties out there but they're the same kind, like the Bible says what happened. Okay, Timothy, U-Y-E-D-A, Uyida. Timothy, I'm sure I butchered that one. And I took phonics in school, but I don't remember how to pronounce U-Y-E-D-A. Dear Dr. Ovin, I watched one of your videos during a Christian youth gathering and have to admit that I was definitely impressed by what you had to say. There's been one thing bugging me, however. In the video I saw, you did not mention anything about the process of carbon dating, which supposedly suggests, or proves, not really sure how, that things have existed a few million years ago. I think this process is something to do with the measuring of degradation of carbon in bones from prehistoric creatures. I'm not too keen on the subject. I'm just looking for some clarification. What do you think? Please email me back, Tim. Well, Tim, I can't email you back. I don't email out of my computer for fear of getting some kind of virus in it, but I can answer your question. Carbon dating is covered very thoroughly on videotape number 7. If you watch it, you can download it right off the website. Go to drdino.com and click on downloads or something, and then download video part 7, or you can order it on DVD or VHS. Here we go. Dave writes in. In 2 Kings 8, Ahaziah was 22 years old when he began to reign. And in 2 Chronicles 22, he was 42 years old. Is this a copyist error? No, Dave, it's not a copyist error. All right. We have a whole article about that. Now, is that on our website?
No, this is actually an article I found somewhere else. I was actually trying to find the answer. I've read the answer to this before, but I forgot it, so I was looking for it yesterday again. And it's amazing how many websites and how many Christians are so willing to say it's a copyist error, or it's an error in the King James, or it's an error in any Bible, before actually studying it out.
Right.
But when they study it out, they'll find out that it says, let's see, this is a very quick and concise answer to this. It says, the problem is solved when we see both can be true, both ages, that is. We must remember that the nation of Israel was divided into two kingdoms at that time, the southern kingdom, which is Judah, and the northern kingdom, Israel. Ahaziah was the son of Athaliah. Athaliah was married to Jehoshaphat of the southern kingdom. Athaliah is not only Jehoshaphat's wife, but was also the daughter of Omri of the northern kingdom. So Ahaziah is kind of tied into both the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. It says, Jehoshaphat, after his fourth year, joined forces with Ahab to fight. If both kings had been killed, someone would have had to unite the two kingdoms. That's when Ahaziah was first, you know, put on throne there at age 22. Later on, Jehoshaphat lives, comes back, and eventually later on down the road, Ahaziah is crowned king again. So there's no contradiction there.
And actually, well, makes first, very, time, he, first time he's crowned king with his mother. His mother actually reigned. He was crown king, but the mother was actually in charge. And then 20 years later, he's king by himself. Mm-hmm. And there's several possible explanations for that. It's not a contradiction that I can see anyway.
The last point they have on here, they said the two books, let's see, this fits the two books because Kings records with emphasis on the kings of Israel, which is the north kingdom, and Chronicles records with emphasis on the kings of Judah, the south. So that's why they may seem a little different. It's because they're both recording with emphasis on two different kingdoms. But they're not contradictory.
Plus, there are like six guys in the Bible named Ahaziah. It was a common name, you know. If I said George Bush became president in 1988. Oh, no, George Bush became president in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
Or 2000, whatever it was. Yeah. They're both true. Two different George Bushes.
Mm-hmm.
It's George Bush and George W. Bush. So they don't seem to get it. Okay, here we go. Logan writes in. And if you want to call in, folks, you can call 850-479-DINO, 850-479-DINO, or go to AOL Instant Message and go to Dr. Dino Live and send us your question. Oh, I had some from yesterday. Before I take Logan's, there were some I didn't finish from yesterday, John. I'm sorry. Let's see. That's going to be saved someplace in my computer, along with 40 bazillion other things. I got to turn on Instant Messenger. Okay. Let me get that after I get the to-do for me. Okay. AOL Instant Message from yesterday, and I apologize for leaving you hanging. Flam Cheesy writes, I want to thank you for your great service. God bless you. Oh, well, thank you, Flam Cheesy. Second was the Bart Man, 47, got left hanging yesterday. I know the right to travel is a right, but what about use of tax-supported public highways and streets, etc.? There. My AOL's message is on, John. I can't believe it. I did it myself. There we go. Also, provision is given for farmers to temporarily use the public roads for driving from one privately owned field to another without any licensing. However, a general automobile usage, it seems logical that the use of the public roads is a privilege, not a right. Let's see. I don't have enough information to answer your question. I have as many questions as many other people do about do you have the right to drive, and it's just not something I get into in my seminars. So what I have read indicates to me that nobody's required to have a driver's license unless you are a creature of the state, which is another long, interesting story that I just simply don't have time to mess with. Right now. Maybe someday, but too many other dragons to slay, so I have to forego that question. Okay, AOL Instant Message. We got one from... I got a question. Now, there's a cool screen name. It's like Mehershalalap Abagacha Huchi or whatever yours was, Jonathan. I got a question, says, it seems that it comes with all the slides. Many of the slides have pictures, graphics, scans from books that are part of the slide. Can I extract these images from the slides, or do they come separately? I'd like to make some of my own slides. Let's see. I got a question. Here's what I would do. I think you can call the slide up on screen. Many of them are built in PowerPoint in layers, so you could strip off the text if you wanted, and then hit print screen. There should be a button on your computer called print screen. You hit print screen, and that saves it, and then you open up a Photoshop program or whatever you're using, CorelDRAW, and paste it in there, and then you can work on it. But that's my very limited understanding. Is that how they're doing it, John, to get a picture out of PowerPoint?
You should be able to just select the individual element itself, the picture, whatever you have in there, and just copy that and paste it somewhere else. If you do print screen, that'll copy your entire screen, taskbar, your start button, your timestamp at the bottom right, basically everything.
Right, okay.
So it might be best to just copy and paste an individual picture.
Okay. Well, there are about close to 7,000 now pictures in PowerPoint used in my seminar, so ought to give you something to work about. Here's one that just simply says, asking about the creation seminar package.
No, that's what the last one was.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's if you get the startup kit, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. We have a kit. It's $150. It's all roughly 6,000 or 7,000 slides that I use in PowerPoint, plus a videotape on how to do PowerPoint for boneheads, a bunch of ideas on starting a ministry. Helpful thing to get people started doing ministries like this. We need thousands more doing similar ministries on creation. Anyway, thanks for the question. you might want to contact our technical department if you have any questions on that. They're gone for the day, but call tomorrow and go to extension 132. Is that the right one? Forget probably for Derek or DJ or 132 is Ken Andrew's desk. That'll get you to somebody down there, and they can transfer you to who you need to go to. Here we go. Logan writes in. A pastor at my church recently acquired your creation science seminars and has been showing them weekly to our congregation. My wife and I were hooked from the get-go, so we purchased our own set. I am continually impressed and overjoyed with them. I hadn't realized how brainwashed I was, despite believing in a literal six-day creation. My mind still thought in the billions of years dogma. May the Lord bless you in your efforts as you spread his unfailing word. Thank you, Logan. Well, thank you, Logan. I appreciate that. Glad you enjoyed it. Spread it around. Here's one from Karen, who says, any thoughts on the Great Sphinx as to when and who built it? Boy, Karen, I wish I knew. Here's one theory, okay? The theories fall into four basic categories, okay? Two of them say the Sphinx and the pyramid were built before the flood even came, and they, survived the flood, which is a possibility. The other two theories say it was built after the flood. And then those two each split into two categories of it's built by some heathen before the flood, or it's built by some godly people before the flood to leave a message behind of some kind. The other two theories say it's built by godly people after the flood, or it's built by a bunch of heathen after the flood. It probably was not built during the flood. So, of Noah, we're talking about. I kind of lean toward the idea that it was built by some, at least for a godly purpose, before the flood came, and was built to leave a testimony behind. But I would not be dogmatic on that. I simply don't know. I don't know anybody who does for sure. When the Sphinx was found, it was neck deep in sand, and just the head was sticking out. And as the more they dug, the more they realized, man, there's a whole body under here. So it may have been windblown sand over centuries. It may have been actually flood deposits, flood deposited sand. Don't know. Okay, Diane writes in, I just finished watching Seminar 7 and really and already purchased the book, The Language of the King James Bible. Thank you for opening my eyes. However, I also have another translation that I was using and wondering if you know anything about it. It's called the New Translation, written by John Nelson Darby around the mid-1800s. I've always enjoyed this translation, but if it too has been translated from the Alexandrian text, I will stick with the King James. I appreciate your thoughts, comments, information you have about this translation. As always, thank you for your ministry. Diane. Oh, let's see. Diane, I'm not familiar with the Darby translation, particularly called the New Translation. I just can't help you. I tell you who could, though. The author of the book that you're reading, called The Language of the King James Bible, the author of that book is Gail Ripplinger, who has a website, avpublications.com. avpublications.com. They could answer that question. I have some stuff by Darby here in my library, but I don't think I have that particular book. Here's one from John, nicknamed Jack Kenny. Like Jack Kennedy. Jack Kenny writes, something is bothering me. Am I right to say that if the Big Bang was real, it should leave a hole in space where nothing is? An explosion leaves little debris where it actually occurred, if it expanded. Good point. Big Bang ought to leave a hole. Everything should be the outer side. Why is everything evenly spread out? Why did they begin the Big Bang? And if it came from here, I mean, obviously, everything appears to be the same distance from Earth. Of course, that would be obvious no matter where you were standing. I would think it would appear to be the same distance.
Yeah.
Ought to be a hole someplace. Good point, Jack. I appreciate that. He says, question two, if the furthest galaxies are 14 billion light years away, then 14 billion years ago, wherever we are and where the galaxies are, we're very close. So to get where they are now would require speeds in excess many times the speed of light. It seems people are willingly ignorant and will believe anything. Jack, I agree about the willingly ignorant part. Big Bang Theory, I think, is dumb for lots of reasons. But, John, this is telling us here in this magazine that the Big Bang Theory is true. No, the one said it's probably got some problems, right?
He's actually saying the Big Bang Theory has many serious problems, and he's saying it's more of a funding project than it is actually, you know, a scientific theory. They're saying they're building so much on the Big Bang itself instead of actually testing the Big Bang and answering the critics who are in opposition of it. So, and that's a new scientist this month.
Nothing scientific about the Big Bang. New religionist, it ought to be. They should change the name. Well, they're criticizing the Big Bang. We'll give them that one. Okay, Michael Didivoni. I don't know, Michael, about the last name. Must be Italian. It says, what does Dr. Ovin think of the account of Genesis 30? What did Jacob do? Does he have any scientific explanation? Thanks for taking my question. Genesis chapter 30, if I recall, Michael, is telling the story. Grab my Bible here. Of Jacob and Laban and the flocks. It says he put rods there, and the flocks brought forth ring-straked and speckled and spotted and brown and stuff like that. This has been criticized. This is the story. Okay. Genesis chapter 30. Here is my understanding of what happened. Jacob, at the watering troughs, put dividers to hold the creatures in place, in this case the goats, like farmers often do. They have a little divider, so they have to stick their head through this thing to eat or drink. And the farmer can clamp their head still, so they hold still while they milk them or whatever they're going to do to them. In the case of horses, they put horseshoes on or something. So apparently he had some kind of system where the goats would come to drink or eat, and he would use artificial insemination, which is what farmers often do. They want a particular, they want to make sure that a particular bull or male fertilizes the whole herd. They will artificially inseminate them using a rod. So I don't see any problem. Genesis chapter 30 to me is not sympathetic magic like one critic I debated, Dr. Pruitt, said this is sympathetic magic. You know, they were looking at a picture of a striped cow, so they had a striped calf. You know, no. Jacob knew a lot about these critters, and he used artificial insemination to make sure they had the right kind of creatures he's looking for. Read Genesis 30 with that in mind, Michael, and see if that makes any more sense. Okay. Here's one from David Weaver. Looking at the gap theory question, personally I don't care for how the scriptures are handled by both sides of the discussion, but just wondering if you could tell me if the very good means perfect. If Adam brought sin into the world, what did Eve do? What did the serpent do? Didn't both of them sin before Adam? Hope you can answer. Understand if you don't have time. The Lord will give me an answer if I just stop being such a sluggard and go out and study it. Well, David, good question. Obviously, it appears that Satan sinned first, but that was in heaven. Adam brought sin into the world, not necessarily into the universe. Apparently, the sequence was Satan sinned, or rebelled, and became Satan. He was Lucifer. He came to earth, deceived Eve. So she was, according to Scripture, according to 1 Timothy, deceived. Now, she disobeyed, so it's still sin. But she was deceived into disobeying. Adam knew full well what he was doing, so with full knowledge, he deliberately took of the fruit or whatever it was. Okay, break time. We'll be right back, folks. Hang in there. All right, folks. Welcome back to the Creation Science Hour. There we go. I'm sorry. Welcome back to the Creation Science Hour. This is Kent Hovind talking to you live this 26th of May, 2004. Oh, boy, we're glad to hear it. This is our final segment. We're out of time again, John. This thing goes so fast. We could have to do a two-hour program and still not have enough time, I don't think. Here we have taking questions or AOL instant message if you want to call us. You can call 850-479-DINO and be on the program live, or AOL instant message us at Dr. Dino Live. Here's a question from Gleb, G-L-E-B. Gleb writes, Dr. Hovind, the second law of thermodynamics cannot be used against evolution theory. The common entropy of an isolated system increases, it's true, but the Earth isn't an isolated system. The universe may be, but the entropy can decrease local. At the same time, the entropy can stay or increase somewhere else. Hope you understand my bad English. Sincerely, G. Gleb Sternhars. Well, Gleb, you are correct that entropy, or the tendency to fall apart, can increase in one area if there is a loss of energy from another area. For instance, an individual can walk in, expend some of his energy, and clean up a room that was disorderly, which my desk needs right now very badly. So does yours, by the way, Jonathan. You've been working till 4 in the morning and still can't get your desk clean, right? That's your piling system, like mine?
Yeah, it's actually a little more organized today than it was yesterday. I inputted energy today for about 10 minutes.
But see, it's not just inputting energy. It's got to be intelligently directed energy. I could go over it in 3 seconds and sweep the desk clean. And it'd be clean, but it wouldn't organize the stuff on there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so to say that, you know, the sun adds energy to the earth and therefore that's going to overcome the second law, Gleb, you're totally mistaken, okay? You have to have intelligently directed energy. Drop a hand grenade in the front seat of your car and see how it organizes your upholstery. It's not going to do it, okay? Fill the front seat of the car full of gasoline and drop a match in and see how fast your car runs. You know, your car is able to use gas and go down the street because you have a very complex mechanism called a drivetrain. Engine, carburation system, you know, transmission system, differential, and wheels. Otherwise it wouldn't work. So it's totally wrong and bogus and a bold-faced lie. Some professor told you that the Earth receives energy and that's how it overcomes the second law. That is just a bold-faced lie. It is true we receive energy, but it's not going to overcome the second law. Okay, Del, D-E-L, Ray writes in, I was directed to your website by the Creation Evidence Museum website staff. My daughters have science fair coming up, and we'd like to know if you have any creation-based experiments that can be done for science fair. I saw your segments on creation in the 21st century. Really enjoyed your material. God bless you. Well, thank you, Dale. Appreciate that. And Dr. Ball is a good friend of mine. I've been on his program many times. And he's coming to speak here at our Southeast Creation Conference this September. As far as your question, I do have a videotape called Science Project Ideas. We went around our totally amazing dinosaur adventure land and videotaped a bunch of ideas that people can use to do science projects exactly like this. So you may want to contact our ministry during the day. Is that on the website, Jonathan? Creation Science? Science Project Ideas, the video?
Yeah, that is on the shopping cart, drdiner.com.
So go to drdiner.com, and if all else fails, click the search engine, type in Science Projects, and it'll find it. Okay. Jared Leda, L-E-D-A, writes in, I'm a believer in creation science, mostly from watching your tapes that a friend gave me. Most of the things I say I agree to. One question I have been asking, looking for an answer to is, what produced all the salt that is ending up in the oceans? Why isn't the salt ending up in freshwater lakes such as the Great Lakes? Okay, Jared, it is actually some lakes do become infiltrated with salt water and becomes a problem. The Dead Sea, for instance, in Israel, has a salt water spring in the bottom of it that is wreaking havoc because all this salt water is being pumped up into the freshwater, which will destroy the Sea of Galilee. Did I say Dead Sea? Should be Sea of Galilee. So the Jews very ingeniously have taken a pump system, and they are pumping the salt water out of the Sea of Galilee before it, right from the base where it comes in. And they have dug a channel all the way along beside the Jordan River. So the salt, they have two rivers flowing side by side, the Jordan River and a saltwater river, which is being pumped out of this of the Sea of Galilee precisely so it doesn't become salt. But salt in the ground is one. There's salt domes, and there's also just mineral salts that wash off the soils and plants and stuff. Bottom line is the oceans are becoming saltier, but because of the constant distillation cycle where the clouds drop fresh water at higher elevations and it runs into the lakes and rivers, as long as there's a good flow through, they don't accumulate, a lot of salt. The Dead Sea, I've got some Dead Sea water up here. Have you smelled that stuff, Thane? You should smell it. Don't taste it, okay? But if you just put your finger in it, first place, it's extremely heavy because it's just plain. So here's regular water, Dead Sea water, same volume. Dead Sea water is like, 30% salt or something. It's incredible. And it smells absolutely horrible and tastes much worse. I recommend you not. It feels real oily, too. Yeah, well, you can float in it. I just got pictures of me floating in it. I mean, it's just really, really dense. So you're much more buoyant in there. So the Dead Sea is about, 13 times saltier than the ocean or something like that, 11 times saltier, whatever it is. Anyway, it's salt concentration and gaining salt all the time as the Jordan River flows into it and that new little river they built just to get rid of the salt. Let's see. Rick Patton writes, if evolution is constant change, why has the basic principle of DNA replication remained constant? Good question. Rick, evolution doesn't happen. One of the dumbest theories on planet Earth. If somebody wants to believe it, that's great. I don't care what they believe, but they sure should not call that science. Okay, John, here's a long article. I don't know if we have time to summarize this, or is this just all of the... Oh, it's okay. It's all the pictures. People writing books about the secret chronicles of Mars. Oh, here's a website about... I better read through this for tomorrow. I won't have time to read through all 20 pages in the next 3 minutes. Here we go. Lionel Adkins writes in, I thank you for your ministry and all you do to provoke people to think. I just purchased your DVD seminar and am anxiously awaiting its arrival. I heard you mention at one point on your radio program that you couldn't be dogmatic about when the rapture of the church takes place. And I had a thought about that. If the rapture was anything other than pre-trib, couldn't you predict when it was going to occur, i.e. by the 3.5-year point or the 7-year mark? Thanks for your work. My prayers are with you, Lionel. Well, Lionel, that's true if we knew when the tribulation started. I don't know how we're going to exactly know that either, because there seems to be prosperity right at the beginning of the tribulation. For some time, it's not as bad as the last part appears to be. If you read through Matthew 24, the whole book of Revelation, Daniel, whatever it is, chapter 6, 7, 8, talks about that question. I'm hoping for pre-trib rapture, obviously. I don't think I could prove it from Scripture, but that is what I believe in. That's my take on it right now. Okay, Heaves 23 is back, writes in. I have a question. How did Jesus' teaching get over to the people in North America at the time of Christ? I was talking about it with my friends the other day, and they said there were no ships back then. But I don't think they could prove that. Just wonder what your take on it is. Well, I disagree about the ships. I mean, Noah had a ship 2,400 years before that, a really large one. Solomon had a whole navy of ships in 1000 B.C. So, no, they had plenty of ships and probably traded back and forth across the ocean. It's pretty good evidence that a lot of folks came across the ocean way before Columbus did. So as far as ships, I don't think that's a problem. As far as how did the people in North America get the gospel, it appears that the disciples got fired up at the day of Pentecost and actually took the gospel just about every place, probably including to the Americas. I think there was transoceanic travel back then. That's would be my take on it. Okay. Is it the bell to stop? No, we still got a couple minutes, John. Okay, here we go. Jack Seckler writes in. I want to start out by saying I greatly enjoyed watching your seminar and debates. It has not only increased my interest in the topic of creation evolution, it has strengthened my faith as well. I'm a college freshman, and the evolution theory seems to be everywhere. Let me stop there and say, Jake, you are correct. It is in history class, math class, English class. It's everywhere. It's in kindergarten. It's a pagan religion being thoroughly spread at our expense. And I obviously resent that, as do many others. Let's see. Jake writes in, it is truly a great blessing, a great thing that you are doing, and I doubt you realize how many people you are impacting. Anyway, I have a question concerning Satan and the fallen angels. Recently, I stumbled across a website dealing with Cydonia, the so-called ancient civilization of Mars. Apparently, there are pyramids much larger than those in Egypt, even a Sphinx up there. These guys are Christians, and they seem to think the verses like Ezekiel, which refer to Lucifer walking up and down in the stones of fire, depicts planets. Oh, UFOs, aliens, etc. Jake, I disagree. This may sound like heresy or something, but it could be that before the flood came, the people were so advanced, so intelligent, that they actually had space travel. That is one option. I don't say that it's true. I'm just pointing out this is an option, that they may have actually had, you know, space travel before Noah's flood came. I think this second option is that what appears to be pyramids and faces on Mars are purely baloney. They're just shadows that just happen to look that way. I currently believe that's probably more to the truth than anything. I don't think there are any faces or shadows or pyramids on Mars. I think it's just a coincidence.
When I lived in Arizona, there was a place that we used to always go through. We'd go cliff diving into this lake and so forth. But on the way back home, there was this mountain on our left side of the road that was shaped exactly like, they're not exactly like, but it resembled three people, you know, just standing there. It resembled it so closely, but yet it was formed by natural...
Just a mountain, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you go to Colorado Springs, they've got the... have you been rock climbing there in Colorado Springs, Garden of the Gods? The kissing camels. You know, you get a quarter mile away and say, oh, it looks like two camels kissing. Well, it's a couple of rocks. Yeah, with a hole. It's a hole under their neck.
Mm-hmm.
There's one mountain I was at in California, I think. They call it the Sleeping Indian Princess. Because it looks like the profile of an Indian girl laying down. And that's just mountain peaks, okay?
Yeah.
I think on Mars, that's all it is. I don't think there's any intelligent life up there. I don't think there's much intelligent life down here, actually. But after teaching school 15 years, you don't...
See, no one makes a big deal about these mountains here on Earth. They're not going to say, well, it looks like someone went up there and created those. But, of course, when something like that appears on Mars, automatically there's intelligent life up there. Someone's running around making sand dunes. And, of course, they're just ignoring it here.
Driving their motorcycles around. Okay, we got time for another one here. I'll hurry. If you're on AOL Instant Message us, folks, you can Dr. Dino live or call in 850-479-DINO. You've got to go to the website and check out the new stuff we have, the new debates on video or DVD. DVD is available now. Video is coming out any minute. And if you want to start your own ministry doing video duplication, copying tapes for folks, we have a really good video system, several sections of our system. They come 10 to a section. We're going to be selling off since DVD is taking off so much better than VHS, and since we have need of the room that it's in, we need to sell off about 7 sections of our duplication system. You can get a distribution amplifier, all the BNC cables, and 10 Sony 4-head hi-fi stereo VCRs for $1,000. Just the amplifier was $1,200. The DA. Panasonic AG100DA, I think is the initials on it. You can look it up on the internet. You get one of those and all the cabling for $1,000, and you can make your own tapes and give them out to folks and get people saved. So we just have a few of those to sell off. If you want one, give us a call soon at 850-479-DINO. And if you want to sign up for our Southeast Creation Conference, you can still do that on the web. That is drdino.com, or you can call in during the day and get a hold of Martha. She's the secretary handling the Southeast Creation Conference. Justin, Mindy, hang in there. We'll get to you tomorrow. Join us again tomorrow, folks, live here at Dr. Dino. Thanks a lot.